so everybody is in attendance from the committee, and Madeline is sick today. She missed school and missed the meeting today as well, so hopefully she can get better soon. And Eddie's here. So with that, do you want to begin?
Certainly. I sent to all the committee members the agreement between the county and the UW System Board of Regents. This will look familiar to Supervisor Decker and Skolitsky, having seen it. It's an annual document that is sent every year to the committee to document the 40% of the salaries of the educators and the fringe benefits. And so what you see in the document is the breakdown of actual costs for the FY for university fiscal year, July 1 through June 30th, and then the anticipated, that's the anticipated budget for July 1, 2014 through June 30, 2015, and then what we actually spent from July 1, 2013 to 14. And that's why there's a credit, because as many of you know, we had a lot of changes in positions, and so people left and new people came on board, and so that is the adjustments that's made, so that's the credit that we received. So this is signed annually as the agreement based upon what we know for today, knowing that we will have an ag educator coming on board soon. We still place the line item for the salary in there as a hold, as a placeholder. Then come next year, it'll reflect the actual salary. So it's a document that I should say is fluid, because it's just that it's an estimate of what we anticipate when we have vacancies. So does anybody have any specific questions?
Can you kind of explain a couple of the swings for the 10,000? I know it's on the last page, but...
Yeah, so you'll see the differences in that with the change in Genie, because Genie didn't start until, let me think what date, when she actually started. It would be new, so that is a change, because Barb's position when we added the consumer horticulture educator, I believe, was in April. So that'll be a bit of a change. And then the salary change, and what we refer to as LT, or my salary change, would be an increase in the department head role. The anticipated, I believe it was $900 that they added to the department head stipend, and that would be, oh, that's in the actual budget. The LTE are hours that we pay our project people on, so if they, for example, will have a student employee working on a special project for a grant that Amy received for the recycling guide, then we pay that person. We never know whether or not we're going to get that money, so we only pay it out when the person is actually hired, and then we use the grant funds for that. So that's why it shows that amount as a change for a student. Travel is the travel money that is put in the budget for the ag educator, because that's a position shared between Racine and Kenosha, and we put their travel money comes from the state, so we both contribute an equal amount from Kenosha and Racine County, so their travel doesn't come through the county. So that's the difference. That would be the actual. So you can see that for July 1, 2013 through June 30th, 2013 through June 30th, 2014, we budgeted 159, but the actual was 148. So we have that credit.
So Barb Larson's over because she was doing Gene Polinsky Christensen's, you know, job until she got hired, and then leveled off.
Right. So Barb was a full-time horticulture educator, and then part of her salary, part of her appointment went to the state. She's doing a state liaison role. So that percentage of her appointment now is being filled by Jeannie. So we pay less of Barb's salary, but the county contribution stays, and it's now paying Jeannie.
Right. So it's somewhat of an offset.
That absolutely. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
What's fringe academics?
Those are all of the educators' fringe benefit rates. That's fringe academic is the separate from LTE. LTE is the limited term employees. Those are our special project people, so those are very short term. You know, just bring them on for a grant related position. It's not a full time position. An academic would be a full time position.
I think maybe just explain this, but why are there's I see all different numbers. I see 152, 482, and I see 163, 278. Why are these numbers different? Are you saying the number that is for 152, 482, or is that the number you're saying?
Correct.
Okay, so the front,
yeah, you're right. The front page, the total be 152, 482 would be the total. Yeah.
So you should.
Because that includes the $10,000 credit from the reconciliation.
Okay.
But the whole total, if we looked at the total amount, would be the $162.78. But we're getting our credit.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The only other question I have, these numbers were used to put together this budget.
Correct.
This kind
yeah.
of. So it's sort of what we signed here is already reflected in.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
Is it customary that I'm assuming the committee signs on each one of these lines on the
They do. Years and years ago, that was established so that it, because it's so annual every year, rather than look at it, it's just because the budget, the numbers are in the budget. The committee reviews it, signs it, and it moves forward.
So, and even though we have a county executive form of government, they still have that older way of doing it. That's sort of different than most everything else.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how many years ago I must have spoke with Dave and Al, and we go ahead, have the committee review it. You've got your numbers in your budget. Nothing's, because of an annual contract or annual agreement. So, yeah, we've been doing this.
That was after we were a county executive.
Oh, yes. Yeah, this would be way, I'm thinking John Collins era or even about that time. And then when I took on, that was when David Hines was the department head. Then when I took it on, we just reaffirmed that's what you want to do. And they're like, absolutely, it's fine. So.
Okay. I don't have any questions. Does anybody else on the committee or youth and governance have a question for Debbie? Perhaps we'll have a motion so that we all can sign the original.
Yeah, I actually have three originals.
Three.
So yeah, so if you start and you sign on the first line, if you'll sign on the first line for all of them, then pass them to Supervisor Wetzloff, we'll just go around until Supervisor Skolitsky will get the last line. That's okay.
I'm
going to
make a motion to approve the contract.
Second.
Agreement.
Motion by Supervisor Decker, second by Supervisor Vogel to sign the contract and the agreement. Any questions? Youth and governance?
Does this budget have anything to do with the youth options programs?
The what?
The youth options programs that UW Extension does.
Youth options programs. We don't do any youth options programs.
Oh, my counselor is supposed to that you guys sponsor. I don't know.
I'm not aware. We do not do. Now, that could be at Parkside?
Oh, is that Carthage?
Is that Carthage?
Yeah. I don't know. I was just curious.
Oh. We have a lot of programs with the word youth in them, but youth options is not one of them.
Any other questions? Okay. Eddie, then you go first.
Aye.
And members of the committee, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda then is
presentation of the budget.
Right, for UW, starting with UW Extension.
You note, I'm assuming my page numbers are the same as yours. Does the budget start on page 369?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Then on page 370, you just see the recap. As you look at page 371, Business Unit 67100, this is what I refer to as the meat of our program. This is our operating budget. We have under our first appropriation unit, our personnel line item, that is our one county employee for our support staff. So that's the $77,456. The only other change in the budget from 2014 that you will note is the line item other professional services that increased from $172,815 to $173,435. That is the number for the educators' salaries and benefits. So that's the number I use to project what our expenses will be for the entire calendar year. What you just approved for the contract takes it through June 2015. Okay, so then I'm projecting the additional 6 months for the calendar year. So that's why you're going to see a little bit of a, you're going to see a difference between what you just agreed to on the 133 contract, because that's on the state fiscal year. We're on a calendar year for the county budget. And so I have to project that additional 6 months. That will also include an anticipated, if it goes through the Board of Regents, an anticipated 3% increase for salaries and benefits. And Barb is expecting to put forward her materials for promotion to professor, which would be a salary increase for her. So I build all of that into the anticipated budget. If it doesn't happen, we don't use it. Money's not there, but I anticipate that. Any questions about that? Because that's the one area that is often, I mean, that's unique to our budget. Then you're going to note that every other line item through the end of that business unit is identical to our 2015 budget with the increase in office supplies. I just rounded that up. The flip page goes to the next business unit, which is our contract with Kenosha Unified, our after-school program. And so we already know we're going to have $11,000, so we built that in. And then our next units there listed are our revenue accounts, which the corresponding revenue applies to the expenses. And we have the one area where all of our programs and conferences and workshops come out of is that line item called sundry department revenue. That's the, we anticipate about $53,000 for 2015. And the Youth Quest project is done, so that one's finished. That's why it's a zero. And that completes our budget. So our 2014 budget was $271,996. Our 2015 budget is $272,902 for an increase of $906.
I have a question. On the school, can you explain the visit after school project? What is that?
Sure. We are contracted with Kenosha Unified to provide educational programs in elementary schools that have what's referred to as the CLC program, or the 21st Century Learning Centers. And we offer two programs right now. We're doing After School Ambassadors, which is a tutoring program. And the new one that we're doing for the first time this year is STEM. So we're actually training, we're working to get a college student. Right now, Bethany and Carmela are doing it, teaching science, technology, engineering, and math programs.
I hear you. I think when you were discussing, to me, it seems like not much of a budget. I mean, for something I see important, is that, how did you decide it? I mean, I'm thinking the numbers that we can maybe put some attention from your department, and when we're looking at importance of budgets, it seems kind of low for something that's extremely important, I guess. And, I don't know if this is the appropriate time to discuss this because it's a big issue, but I'm just wondering where that number came from.
The 11,000?
Yes.
That's what Kenosha Unified offered.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and I will tell you that has gone down. That has gone down over the years. So I'm assuming that is related to their funding issues and how much they have available for their after-school programming. But that has gone down over the years.
So this 11, the revenue comes from Unified.
It does.
Nothing from the county?
Nothing from the county. That $11,000 is 100% from Kenosha Unified.
thank you. I have a problem with that, not from your side, from theirs, but so, thank you.
Any other questions? I have one. I noticed that you only count the one support person. But in the second page of the contract that we signed, it shows state FTEs 2.94, county FTE 2.16, meaning, you know, we have 40% of those counties, but we just treat that amount as a contractual.
Mm-hmm.
And budget purposes, so, mm-hmm. So this is sort of something that is just a state calculation, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
School project, the 11,000. How many hours per week is that? Does that cover?
Primarily during the school year.
Right.
So that would be the academic year, obviously. And I think right now, Bethany's doing probably 7 to 12 hours a week. Bearing on how many schools
we have. 2 hours a day or 1 hour a day?
Because it's all, exactly, because it's all after school. So, you know, it's the 4 to 6 time frame, and then depending upon hours for prep, and then hours of delivery. But we're probably actually physically only at the school about an hour and a half, probably 90 minutes total time, yeah.
So then, what is the money actually going towards?
Salary and supplies. So if you see, the breakdown there, let me get my right page up here. So I've got the 11,000.
Page 372, bottom.
I don't have 372.
What the hell? That
my
back
got cut
page
off.
Three.
So you'll see there, thank you, Supervisor Decker, 8,000 is salaries, and then actually it's almost all salaries. Where's the supply? There we go, a little bit for mileage, and then operating their operating supplies is the 1600. So that would pay for paper and supplies and program expenses. But you can see it's largely salary. And that's Bethany. Those are hours on Bethany sourcing.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Supervisor Decker.
Yes, so in that same unit, business unit, our adopted budget, wait a second, use for a second. So last year, in column 3, like the salary, it was 20,573.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so different from this year?
That, again, that is the amount of money keeps going down every year.
But this is a cost, that's not a revenue.
But I would expense the amount that, we would expense the revenue that we would have had.
Yeah, she expenses as much as revenue.
I can only expense what I have.
Oh, you had carryover last year.
From the previous year, and carryover would, yeah, if there's anything left over, we are able to carry over from year to year.
But if they're gonna give her 11, then she has to figure out how
and then any carryover from 2014 from this calendar year will not be figured until January or February of 2015. Then it will be rolled over and placed in the line item as a carryover expense.
Okay. I just see that the adopted budget was on line 511100. The adopted budget was 8,000. And then
it went up. Yeah,
yeah.
That would be the carryover. Yeah, because
okay.
I don't do any calculating of carryover.
But that's a carryover at the cost. That's not a carryover. And then it's offset
by revenue.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything outside of that first 67,100, that's the only account that's covered by tax levy.
Okay.
Anything outside of 67,100 is all revenue, grants, or contracts.
Okay.
Non-levy.
Approve and in the committee level and recommend it to the finance committee for approval. second?
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Global, second by Supervisor Decker to, for the committee approval and recommend it to the Finance Committee for approval. On the question, last chance for questions. Seeing none, Eddie?
Aye.
And members of the committee, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No one's opposed, so approve this. So that would bring the planning development budget, I would say.
Page 35?
135.
Sounds like red shirt.
Need to see?
For those of you who don't know me, my name's Jim Kupfer, and I'm the CFO for Public Works and Development Services. I help these fine people in the planning department with their financial needs, including the preparation of their budget. For those of you who are on the Public Works Committee, Supervisor Poole, Supervisor Stolitsky, you'll be seeing the same stuff Monday night as a part of the entire Public Works presentation. That's why there's a page number 4 on the bottom. Now, these numbers I pull out of the budget book, somewhere between page 133 and, I forget what the last page number is.
138.
And I just do a summary here, and then Andy and I prepare just a we show the differences by the major cost sections and the major revenue components, and we just put a little explanation on the bottom. As far as, and the 2014 budget that I used here is the modified and adopted budget. So it might include a little bit of carryover from the original adopted budget. It's not as much here. There aren't any big numbers like there was in Teddy's budget. Do you want to tell them what the differences are, Andy?
Sure. Yeah, I can do that. So if you look at the bottom of the page, it'll give descriptions of the changes that you see on the top part of the page. So in the personnel section, you can see that there's actually an increase of $5,959, and that's due to the proposed increases and step increases that are anticipated for the next calendar year. The next line item is the contracted services.
Excuse me? This 487,373, is that like you're adding page 137?
If you go to page 136, up on top there.
Oh, okay, you're looking.
It's the same numbers.
It's all the groups.
Yeah, it's everything that, what we call like personnel, that's everything that's a 5100 account, it's that appropriation level.
Okay.
And 5200 is contracted services, 5300 is supplies.
Okay, under the whole department, not yeah. Just.
Yes.
Okay.
Right,
you.
So when we're talking about salaries, all the things that go with it, medical, FICA, life insurance, all those things together.
Okay.
Supervisor Deckers, your question about did we include the tree planting and the board adjustment?
Yes.
We'll get to that. This is just page 133 through 138.
This is just the Department of Public Works and Development Services,
yes.
Dash planning and development.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So then the next item, the contracted services, there is a decrease of $6,825 that comes through two different areas, mainly through sewer PAC. There is a, we pay, I guess, the county share through the equalized assessed value, and there was a reduction in that. And then there is also a reduction that we are anticipating in this other professional services for our office. That we have when we need to use a consultant whenever that is needed. Then the supplies, you can see there's an increase of $82. I think we basically just rounded up on a couple categories, $50 for books and manuals, $32 for office supplies. And then the fixed costs remain the same. Getting to the revenues, We do have a reduction in land conservation. That's the aid that we receive from the state for farmland, or just for conservation services. And they, the state budgets a certain amount of money every year, or actually biannually, and then they divide that up according to the ratios that they have. And so we are anticipating to receive $119,000 instead of $130,000. Permits and land use fees, we are showing a reduction. This is something that our projections always kind of flow up and down, because it's hard to determine exactly on what things are going to come through our office with permits and rezones and CUPs. So we try to look at past historical trends. Are we moving upward? Are we moving downward? And right now we're kind of remaining actually steady. So we're slowly kind of bringing down the projection of the revenues for that. The sale of maps and plats, we're actually going to take that to zero, just because with the move of our GIS person in our office, he did most of the sales of maps and data for mapping. And now that he is part of land information, hardly any sales are coming through our office. All those sales are occurring through land information. And so with such a small number, it's going to probably be a couple hundred dollars. It seems pointless to keep a line item for that anymore. So we're just going to include that in with our permits and land use fees. The development review and verification, that's again one of those numbers where we again try to just see where the trend is. We're kind of flat right now, and so we're kind of bringing down where we used to be with revenues for development review, so we're bringing that down to $5,000 for this next year.
Explain what that is, development review.
For any development that comes through our office, like for stormwater reviews, the that is the revenue that we would take in for doing the review of their submitted stormwater plans.
I have two questions. Assuming Summers incorporates and you have to provide their services, contractual services, what kind of money are you looking at? Or is that something you don't know yet?
I don't know all that. That hasn't been discussed.
No idea.
I don't know what the parameters are going to be on that. I mean, we've made a proposal, but yet that's something that still has to be approved.
Okay.
Yet.
And the other question I have is on sewer pack services. Jim Cruiser told me that's a hell of a buy for what we're paying. Your opinion on that?
Well, that's true. They provide a lot of services countywide. And, you know, any of the plans that get worked on, we are a part of. And that's a fee that the county, every county in the Southeast region pays for.
Yeah.
And then there are certain other things that come before us specifically that we ask for their services. Like, for instance, the one that's going to be happening is that we are looking at making text changes to our ordinance. Well, they're going to review all those text changes with their expertise and provide comment back to us at no additional cost. So that's kind of like a service they provide just because we have them as a regional plan commission.
Yeah, because I was, you know, it's a big number, and I had some concerns about some of their agenda items. But I mean, like I said, the county executive pretty much told me that's an act of the deal. So, food for thought. It's not fine. That's what I was told. Maybe Mike knows more since he's on that committee. Care to share with that?
Hell of a bargain, pal.
Okay.
I'm on.
Okay. You ever go over, Mike? Just curious.
I actually do. Oh, would okay. You like to know some things, Mike? This is not the Fort Bend.
I have a question about with this contract with Summers. We would be getting paid to do the same work we're doing that right now, basically, possibly, where it would be like a revenue where we don't have any added expense.
Right.
Roughly?
Right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Right.
Which...
if they chose us to
if
do
we
it.
Got
right,
the contract.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Like Bristol did, hasn't yet.
If we got the contract, there'd still be a budget adjustment in here, right?
Yeah.
Right, but what I'm saying is we would be providing the same services to them that we are right now, but we'd actually be getting a revenue for it.
Again, yeah, depending on how it's worked out.
Exactly.
I mean, there's things to talk about, flat fees, keeping the permit fees, you know,
right.
All that stuff would have to be determined on that.
Because there's a lot of concern. I mean, it adds to the picture of when incorporation, somebody's miscellaneous added expenses or whatever.
You didn't quite finish. You were going to, on your sheet, you got levy and carryover to explain.
Right, and I think, Jim, you wanted to just kind
of
explain
that. Yeah, there's an account in your budget for $78,000. It's called Other Professional Services. This 2014 budget is $78,000. In 2013, there was an individual who worked in the department who's gone. And so for 2014, we put in the budget in case we needed to spend money for that individual services. That and some grant writing services. So far this year, we haven't really used that budget. We haven't either needed the services or other people have stepped in and did the services with existing folks. So that $78,000 is just sitting there. At the end of this year, rather than just turning it back to the general fund, we won't bond it again. We won't levy it again, we'll just carry it over. And if we don't need it in 2015, then we probably won't need it at all. So that's why you see the funding with levy being a decrease of $42,000. We're only going to levy $487,000, and we're going to fund this account for next year if we spend it with carryover money. It's very similar to what we do with other accounts. If you don't spend it, we'll use some carryover money.
But previously, we've been funding it with levy dollars, but it was only one year. But we didn't use it, so we're using it as carryover.
Right.
So we don't need to levy.
So you don't levy it again.
But if we use it all this year, next year we'd have to levy it.
If we needed it for 2016, we'd have to levy it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And we have always had different amounts in there depending on what the needs were. Long in the past, we always carried enough just to cover the unforeseen contracted needs of needing some additional professional services that we don't have. We're never going to want it to go away. You're always just going to have something there because you can't project what that is.
Well, what were you expecting it was going to be? I mean, you were vague about that.
Well, Jeff, you can probably give a better description of Jeff Yerson's job than I could.
Right,
it was about $20,000 in possible grant writing if we needed somebody to do that. And we've used her, and you'll see it in the parks budget. We do some grant writing there. And about $20,000 of it was in this budget in case planning and development needed any help doing grant writing. And the rest of it was for Jeff.
Right, Jeff Yerson was our engineer that we had on staff. And so any of the engineering work that was in our office, that's who we utilized. And in other cases now we contract services out with Rupert Milkey, but there are situations which, like this year, we had Ron, the engineer in Public Works, do some review for us, and we didn't need to go outside to do contractual services, but there could be that case, but that's where that money was being held for because of that change.
We are doing the grant writing, aren't we? Somebody's doing the grant writing still, you know, applying for the grants.
If there's a grant in planning and development to be done, but you guys didn't do any grant writing this year.
Not this last year.
We did some in parks, but that's in a different budget.
Okay, yeah. I guess what I'm asking is we're not missing out on grants because grants and writing.
No.
Yeah, in the past we had written some grants like for some of the monies that were for the bike trails with paving the trails. That was one that we had done through our office.
Okay. I guess the only other question that I have is the fees, which you say are constantly coming down. When's the last time we increased the fees, and do we have like an escalator clause? To me, I would think we should have escalator clauses where every fee goes up 3% every year, something like that, 5%, whatever you want it to. As opposed to going 10 years, never increasing your fees, and then all of a sudden, you know, so how many years has it been since we've increased our fees?
Didn't we just do it just right before the board switched over?
We did. We did. I mean, I would say probably 5 to 7 years ago, we did a major change. And then as recently as this last year before the new board change, we did some adjustments. A couple things went up, a couple things went down based upon actual time needs on that. So, I mean, we do look at that. We, way, way long time ago, we used to have an annual increase on that, but then that ended up making the fees be, you know, really odd numbers, like $83 for something and all that. And so we did get rid of that, and then we just decided to look at it as an as needs basis, if there was a need for an increase to occur. Of course, I mean, if the committee ever wanted us to look at that again, I mean, we would. But I think at this point, from what I understand, is looking at the fees for the surrounding counties, we seem to be right in line with everyone else.
Well, my concern is when you go 7 years, that's too long. You know, maybe every year with an escalator clause would be cause some high numbers, but I don't know what the right number is. 7 years is too long. Probably every year is too much, but every couple of years we should be reviewing those fees. Sometimes, too, just be comparing to other municipalities, if everybody's not reviewing them, that doesn't necessarily mean they're right. What I'm trying to say is, if Racine and our two neighboring counties, because, you know, not counting Illinois, does not increase their fees, they haven't reviewed them for 10 years, and we look at theirs and say, oh, we're right in the ballpark. Well, maybe we're all too low.
Yeah, and actually with what happened, we were kind of leading on the fees, and the other counties now have kind of caught up to where we're at. And so that's one of the reasons why we are the same. I think one of the concerns that was brought to our attention is because of, you know, the economic situation that we've been in for the last handful of years, that the desire to increase fees was not there.
I understand.
When the fees were increased, we did do them on the non-homeowner end, you know, like on the end of developments. So we tried to increase in that end, as opposed to it being like the individual homeowner for a house or for a deck or something like that.
Just a small thing. Notice that 2013 actual is quite a bit higher. Was that because, was there more people?
For
if you look at expenses, actual was a million compared to next
year. Oh yeah, there was a lot more people. What happened was there's two people who went to health department. There's one or two people who went to land information.
Two people to land information.
And then the director retired and was not replaced.
Okay.
And there's a page.
That's fine.
Five.
That's okay.
Yeah, there's a page one. I'm sorry.
There used to be nine employees. And then
yeah, there's a headcount page in there that shows
okay.
you. Yeah.
Okay.
But you're right. It
makes
people.
Sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
you. Okay. Any other questions?
Well, just to clarify a little bit, Chairman, is that Andy and his department did a real good job of reviewing fees because we were asking the same questions, and they took a look at it. And what we wanted to do is charge what they were spending their time on, not just some fictitious number there. And they did a good job reviewing, analyzing, and then put actual numbers to it, which is exactly what we ought to do. We ought not be having the businesses and the citizens coming to us and paying too much or getting away with too low. And I think you did a pretty good job there. So, you know, they're pretty good now. Maybe it's like every other committee, you know, which would be every other lecture or something is a good cycle. Then. So maybe you just did it, so this one would be good, and maybe the next new committee would be a time to maybe
take a look at it.
I had a question, is where, and either Jim or Andy can talk about it. We're carrying over the $78,000, which was for, we need some, you know, consulting fees. However, we've got about, I think roughly numbers, about $80,000 or $85,000 in consulting fees already budgeted in. Why are we keeping the $78,000 if we've already kind of got about $80,000 for that contingency fee, if you will, of, we don't know what it could be.
I mean, why is there an expense budgeted?
Well, yeah, I know you're carrying the $78,000.
Well, I don't want you to confuse the expense side versus the funding side. We could spend in 2014, we budgeted it, didn't spend it.
Right.
2015, we could spend it, so we need a budget for a legal appropriation in order to spend it. It's where you get the money from to do that. So in 2014, we said, well, we're going to have to hit the taxpayer up for that, so it was included in the levy. We didn't spend it, so it's still sitting there unspent. So rather than turn it back into the general fund and then reborrow it again for the budget, we just carry it over. This happens with a lot of accounts in the county budget. Not so many in this area or within public works, but it does happen.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know if that answered your question.
Well, yeah, I mean, because I can, I mean, I'm seeing it as the expense side of it. You've got, and on the contracted services, sewer pack and consulting for whatever the consulting is, right? They're just kind of lumped into the
system. Sewer pack services are
$177,000.
That is right, a separate, all on its own.
Okay.
Right.
But it's in contracted services, though, the line item, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Correct.
That 177 plus, all right, so what we're talking about here, 264. Okay. So it's about 85, 90,000, something like that, for consult, whatever comes up that you don't have, either the skill sets or maybe it's over and above, you know, your the manpower you have. So we got to bring in a consultant.
Right.
So that's what that was, right?
Correct.
Okay. The other question I had was, you're reducing your expectations on permits and land use fees, and yet, you know, you heard from the budget presentation last night that things are really hot around here. Are you sure you want to trend that down as opposed to keep it low? I'm okay with that, but I'm just...
Yeah, because, I mean... Right. This is a hard number to come up with, and we rely a lot with finance to try to look at what they also want to see here. The numbers in, let me just think here. So 2010 seemed to be like the bottom of where things were at, because the fee, you know, our income was coming down and down. And then in 2011, went back up. And it was like, okay, things seem to be on the rise. But then in 2012, things went back down again. So then we thought, okay, maybe we're on a downward trend, maybe we're on an upward trend. And so then in 2013, we thought we were still going to, we tried to hit things as being a little bit more flat, and that still didn't really hold true. We were still kind of coming up slowly, and now this year it seems like we're kind of are coming up. So right now we're kind of bouncing back and forth.
That's a good way.
Just trying to average it out.
All right, fair enough. Thank you.
Yeah, and we used to have a trend going up and then down, and now we're kind of bouncing up and down in the middle.
Let's just average it out.
Yeah. Right.
And anything over and above is just
right.
Bonus.
No crystal ball.
No.
Yeah. I'll give you, for instance, back in 2005, that fee was $296,000. That's the high point of this.
And how many people were in this department?
Probably about 21 at one point in time.
How many?
Well, I mean,
between
if you're including
land info.
Land info was part of P&D at that time, too.
They had a couple of health inspectors.
But that's just permit fees, though.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't have included land information revenue. And so
yeah,
you minus the land information people, then it was about 17.
Right now we got what, 5 people?
Yep.
5.
And headcount's the same from budget to budget.
Lean? I said you're lean.
No, we get a good value out of planning development, no doubt, for what you guys do.
Okay, Supervisor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was an accountant in a quasi-government entity for about 10 years. And on the carryover, a lot of things that I noticed they spent on questionable projects, and I was wondering if there's a possibility of eliminating that carryover.
If we don't use the carryover, we'd have to, and still budget $78,000, then we'd have to levy for it.
So you still think you need that item?
So what he's saying...
Well, right now we're not going to do... It's just postponing the turning it back to the general fund, I guess, is the other way to look at it. If we do have something come up, we won't have the appropriation for it, so we'd have to come back and ask for money for it. So you...
Go ahead. It's like a reserve?
No, it's...
Well, just for a second. It's not a spent item, okay? And it's not... You don't plan on, you haven't budgeted it yet. So wouldn't it be held technically if you're accounting it as like a reserve. I mean, right? I mean, from an accounting standpoint.
Well, do you want to answer? Do you want to let supervisor?
I might be able to explain it just because they're new and they might not understand how. So any extra leftover money from last year that is not used goes normally into the general fund. Countywide, any extra money goes into the general fund, okay? Last year, we budgeted $78,000 for professional services, okay?
Yeah.
We didn't use that.
Totally understand. That's beside.
But we keep that money to make sure we have it if we need it. Instead of putting that $78,000 we did not spend into the general fund and having to re-levy for it this year, we're just leaving that in that line item.
Count, explain why that has problems.
Well, sometimes it gets.
I'm sorry.
Let me just continue.
But
the thing is, it's not a really reserve because they want to still keep that line open for a second year. And if we do go 2 years in a row, not needing that line item for writing grants or whatever, then they're going to let it lapse back into the general fund, which will do what you want to do.
Correct.
And it doesn't actually stay in a line item called carryover, it goes into the line item of.
Other professional services.
Yes. So it's not in a line item that says carryover. It stays in, the revenue stays in professional services.
Okay. Supervisor Poole, did you have?
That's
I think
all
you said it all. I mean, the thing is here, they still want to keep that line item.
I understand.
They don't know for sure. You know, it's kind of looking like they probably won't need the $78,000, but they don't know for sure.
Here's the thing. I understand that totally. I do. I understand. I'm just saying from an accounting standpoint or how it's displayed, say we've got, this is just one division, one expense, $78,000, the entire county budget, say that adds up to a lot of money. How do we know this? I mean, you have $500,000 sitting, or $250,000, whatever the number is. Unspent carried over tax dollars, and it's nowhere to be seen.
Yeah,
that's what I'm getting at. From an accounting standpoint,
it's in here someplace. When
really
it shows, because there's the here's what the spending side, and then there's the funding side. Funding side is there's bonding, there's levying, and that I can't tell you where it is in that book, but someone like Al Schwartz or Dave Pearson can tell you the summation of how much money is borrowed, how much is levied, how much is carryover. It's in there. It's in there for every department.
If an accountant was auditing this and they saw $500,000 in a carryover account, they'd be satisfied with that?
I couldn't answer that question.
Would you? If you're the accountant doing
possibly.
Possibly.
And there's not $500,000.
Not in this, we're talking about from the entire account.
I don't think there's $500,000.
How do we know
that?
Okay, I
don't know where it is. I know it's in the book. You're asking, I'm just one separate little department.
Okay.
Yes? Oh, done.
Looking on page 31, I don't know if that's exactly the one, but it says analysis of 2015 reserves and carryovers. It shows $527,512 in carryovers there. Would that be the one, or would that be on a different page?
Most of that is probably the human services budget, which a lot of it is because of grants that they're off cycle from our budget, so we have to carry it over into the next budget.
Actually, I don't see
the funding.
I don't see any carryover there. I see a reserve for human services, but I don't see
the
carryover.
Item two, that we actually have some contracts out to
Mr. Chairman.
About five.
Can I add?
Yes. Yeah, so.
This reserve, I mean, you're saying you may need engineering. I mean, you use it for consultants, right?
Correct. And we actually have a couple of contracts that some work has been done, about $7,000 to $10,000 of contracted work that had been done in the past. And so, yes, from our perspective, we have to have something because we don't know when we need to go reach into the bag to go get some other professional services. And if there aren't monies available, then we can't do it. Or we would have to come back and go through the process. And so common practices has always been to have monies available for when that need is needed. So whenever that happens, then we'll have a line item available to be able to hire that professional consultant to do whatever that work may be, which we just don't know.
So the other option you have is a committee. Now, first of all, the county board has its most power adopting budgets. I mean, that's really our most power of the entire year. So you can do anything you want to do, but you can say, well, you know, you didn't spend any money at all last year in this particular line item. And I understand you still want to have a line item, but 78 is too much. Let's change it to 48 and then basically return, you know, carry over the entire 78 and change that line item to 48, and then we're making a recommendation to the finance committee of a budget cut, basically. If somebody wants to do that, I'm just saying. I've been on a long time, and I've been on committees where we've cut people. It hasn't happened in a long time, but we used to do that. And then you'd have a lot of people show up at finance committee meetings.
The question, Andy, like you say, when you, I understand if something arises, you need an engineering firm or you need something. I mean, they're not cheap.
No, they're not.
I mean, so $78,000 may seem like a lot of money, but if you're out hiring, you know, a couple of engineers, that doesn't go very far. Just, you know, it's, to me, $78,000 is not a lot of money if you're looking, you know, for consulting fees and engineering or, you know, anything along that line.
One of the things, yes, I'm saying that, I don't have to say something.
After you.
One of the, in the private sector, a lot of times in budget, what divisions will do is unforeseen expenses. You know, they don't know what, just, you know, so they pool that money. Over this month. I'm trying to point a finger at you. But the point is, it never gets labeled. So when you have investors looking at that, they go, what is this pile of money sitting in the R&D division? Well, they don't know if they have to go travel over to this place or do all these things. And so they stockpile their division so that they're prepared in case, you know what I'm saying, something they don't know comes up. Someone says, five guys have to fly to New York tomorrow to do this and that, it's whatever. And it just becomes this big pool, and suddenly when you're looking at what are we doing with it in our budget, you said we got $500,000 sitting in carryovers. Okay, we've got 78 in this division. Well, it's an anticipation of something happening. Okay, how much do we? That could be anything, right? I mean, there you could. It's hard to point at you because this is not a big number. You know what I'm saying? The $500,000 in this budget. $500,000, I think, is
well,
in my opinion.
Go ahead, but I think we need to wrap this up, either make a motion or, you know, because we've discussed it quite a bit.
Well, you're right, but, you know, $78,000 is 10% or 9%. Here's the question I still have in my mind. Under contract services, there is $90,000 beyond what we pay for sewer pack. Why doesn't that cover all of the anticipated consulting services? Why is the 78, and I understand we're just carrying over a case, but if we didn't use it last year, we may or may not need it this year. But if you do need it, then you just come and ask for it, right? And we'd have justification for it. But what is the difference here? Because I'm a little confused. We have 90,000 under consulting services, that's in there, beyond sewer pack. How is that not being used for this unknown but probable consulting, engineering, whatever?
Well, I think you really have to focus on the 78, because if you look at whatever page it is that the
137.
Yeah, for that whole section, there are other items. Telecommunications falls into there. Motor vehicle maintenance falls into there.
Under contracted services.
Right.
No. Okay.
Under that line, under that section, and we have preparation of county plans and ordinances falls under there. So the number is really the 78 that everyone's been talking about.
Right. Okay. Supervisor.
So on page 137, underneath the appropriations with the personnel, you see the other professional services. So we have budgeted $78,000 this year for that, okay?
Right.
So we're setting aside in case we need that money. Well, the money to pay for that is on the next page under carryover, $78,000. If we don't use that carryover money and put that carryover money back in the general fund, we'll have to levy for that $78,000.
All right, but I think the talk now is do you want to keep line item at 78? I think everybody wants to carry over the full 78. Do we want to budget that line item at a full 78 or reduce it or make it to zero? Which I'm thinking the arguments have been placed that we don't want to go all the way to zero. Do we want to reduce it or just leave it alone and recommend it to the finance committee? Wouldn't you say that's pretty much sums it up?
That's it. We don't know what that
advisor pool.
So I just want to clarify. So since it's under other professional services, it couldn't be used then for like motor vehicle maintenance within that category or anything like that. Then it has to be used on that one line item.
Unless we do a budget modification, which we would have to vote on.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I'll make a recommendation. Let's move the, so we got something to vote on. Let's move the, change the 78 line item for the expense to 48, which would return $30,000. Basically save the taxpayer $30,000, and then eventually we'll be making a recommendation to the finance committee as amended.
I second that.
Still have a line item, still a significant amount.
And I second that because we're also being conservative in other revenues by lowering our land conservation, state aid, and the permits and fees. So right there, we're being more conservative in our revenues. So that, I think, helps offset anything.
So just to restate it then so everybody understands, we're lowering the expense, account 521900, to 48,000 and leaving that 78 carryover, which in effect will be returning, correct, $30,000 to the levy.
To reduce our levy. To
reduce the levy.
Right. You need to run that by me one more time.
We're lowering the 78,000 expense line. 48.
Yes.
So leaving the 78 carryover alone. So we're going to basically lower the expenses by 30,000 and we're going to make a recommendation to reduce.
Well, if you use the carryover, so you're saying you want the levy to go down, but use carryover money?
We're going to leave the.
I don't know if you can do that.
Why?
Because I don't know if you can use $78,000 of carryover, you're going to be funding two other accounts other than just the $48,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, we can do it, and if we can't do it, they can fix it in finance.
Yes, they can. It's a technical point. I mean, you can lower the budget, and you can say let it fall into levy.
Right.
But I don't know if you can use $78,000. You have to pick another account to use $78,000 with it. Or you just want to use $78,000 with the carryover money and let the levy go down another
$30,000.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what we're going to do.
Yes.
So that's a motion and a second. Motion by you, second by Supervisor Decker. Explanation by Jim. Any questions? On the motion then, do the governance. Members of the committee, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay.
And I will say this, I commend Andy and the Plain Development Group. Every year, they do a really fine job. Aaron and I have been on three budgets. And I swear, every year, you're finding more ways to be more efficient, and I want to commend you for that because it's
thank you.
Not always a trend in government operations to find ways to be more competitive, more efficient, more lean, but we all need to do that. Without a lot of thanks.
I make a motion to adopt. Can we adopt this portion of the budget, or do we go through all of it first?
Let's do the rest. Yeah, there's a few other departments, okay. Small departments.
As in, if we get one of them.
Page 379, there's a business unit called Board of Adjustment.
Jim's going to hand out is the other areas are Board of Adjustment.
There's a few other small departments that are with no budget change from 14 to 15. Only one of this small departments has levy in it. First one we're talking about is the Board of Adjustment on page 379. There's a couple little departments on the bottom of the sheet that the rest of you will be seeing are dog parks and mountain bikes. We're not going to talk about them here, but they happen to be on this page, so we'll hit those on Monday night. But we'll talk about the first few that are on this page. Andy, you want to talk about the Board
sure.
of Adjustment real quick?
Yeah, the Board of Adjustments, that's the board that does review of variances when there's a deviation being asked and there's no change to the budget for that. That's been pretty steady. The tree planting program is another budget item that's steady. And that's for the countywide tree program that the county does every year with selling tree stock, or it would be bare root stock. The pre-development, 18290, that money is set in there mainly for the account that's money in, money out, where we actually hire consulting work that's paid for by the developer in those instances. So that's just money in there to keep that line item open. That's been determined by finance to be the amount they want in there. And then the land and water management, that is a zero item because that money comes from the state for our conservationists to provide cost share for ag work that's done on farms for doing grass waterways and things like that. And so the money comes into the account, gets, or we pay the farmer the reimbursement, and then the money comes back from the state to reimburse that account. So it's a zero account. So all of those, though, are unchanged from last year and really for probably seven, 8 years.
Can you explain why is the Board of Adjustments, it says carryover, 19,340, and it's the same amount every year. What's that?
That has been put in there for legal fees. So for when the Board of Adjustments ever gets, I guess if they get sued and has to go to court, that's the amount that was determined. I think it was $20,000 at one time, and a little bit got used up once. And then that's a number that's just been carried over to keep that there for in the instance when they need to use that and hire an attorney to represent them, because the county does not represent that. They have to hire their own attorney to represent the Board of Adjustments.
So this is an example of you just carry it over.
Yeah, if they have to spend some money, we'll pull money out of the fund to do it. And the real budget is the other ones, the per diems and the FICA associated with the per diem and the mileage and travel.
But that one's intended to be carried over every year until you use the money.
Question.
Right.
Is there a reason why you can't footnote that? Just exactly what you said, footnote this so we know that. Exactly what it's for.
I mean, sure, it's possible.
Can I make a motion on that that gets footnoted, Mr. Chairman?
Sure. You mean in regards to what that money is?
Exactly what you said, that 19,340 is for legal fees and pending
yeah, litigation. And if you look up at the 521200 line, it shows the legal fees. See, and that's being offset by the carryover.
Okay. I make a motion that this carryover 19 gets footnoted in the budget as to exactly why this is
footnoted or in the budget resolution.
Yes, one or the other.
For a second.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Rensselaer, second by Supervisor Skolitsky to have a either footnote or budget resolution language as to what that 19,340 carryover is. On the question, Chief Governors.
Aye.
say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Any other questions on these four items? Board adjustments, street planting, redevelopment, and water management. Okay, then, a motion for the entire package with the...
I make a motion to adopt this area of the budget with the
two amendments.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Decker, second by Supervisor Vogel, to recommend the approval of this budget with the two amendments. Question? Youth governance?
Aye.
Members of the committee, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. On to finance. Can you tell us if we did anything illegal?
No, it's not.
So that should take us, we're a little, running a little late, so we should jump in.
We can do that. We can definitely do that. Leah took her computer on and turned the screen on, and she was flexible enough to know that she could have the full time, or she might have to have reduced time, and now she's realizing she has the reduced time. So she'll do version, her next version. Leah, as you know, is our interim agriculture educator, and she's going to talk about her, it's the red button, Lee. There you got it, and she turned, there you go. Meat animal quality assurance.
Okay, so timing-wise, should I put the update set the rest of the section meetings?
You could take 7 minutes.
7 minutes. I can do it in 7 minutes. I probably won't get to do the fun activity anyway, but that's okay. It's not as exciting as robots, so. I'm Lee Presley. So since I started in July, I haven't had the opportunity to do a whole lot of programming, but one thing that I did get to do back before the county fair was the Animal Quality Assurance Program, where I taught and tested youth in Kenosha and Racine County on different aspects of quality assurance in meat animals. And it's a program that's required by the Pork Association, which is the Pork Industry Association, basically. It's a collaboration with the University of Wisconsin as well. And it requires any exhibitor that's showing at a county fair, at the state fair, or just an independent large shows that go on to sell their animals to processors, requires them to go through this training. So I guess I can, just backing up a little bit, to relate this back to consumers and ways that it might impact them, is, so the program does a lot with animal welfare, food safety, proper use of antibiotics, all of these things that any producer should know, and most kids showing, you know, they might only be taking one or two animals, but to just assure them that they have a role in the supply chain and they're a very important part of the supply chain as a producer, and their animals go on to be processed and consumed just like any other producer out there, that's really the importance of this program. So you see a lot of headlines. I just did a quick Google search just about food safety, animal welfare. There's lots of issues that come up. So we've all heard about antibiotic use. There's concerns about that, both in humans, but also used in meat, meat animals. There's resistant issues that happen with us, and there are also resistant issues that occur in meat animals. So there's been pushes to get antibiotics out of our meat. That's just one thing. Relating back to the consumer. Also, animal welfare is a pretty hot issue right now. There are lots of companies, McDonald's, Tyson Foods, that are requiring farms to comply with animal welfare standards and actually have quite robust programs to assure that producers are using correct animal handling practices. You might have heard about the pig rot virus that was sweeping throughout the nation this year. Caused some increased prices at the market in terms of pork prices. So those are just some kind of hot issues in the meat industry, and they kind of all filter back into the Meat Animal Quality Assurance Program. So like I said, it's required by the Pork Board. For youth, many adult producers can also participate, but it's not required for them. So the program here in Wisconsin, the MAQA program, Meat Animal quality program is just an expansion of the PQA program, and it's open to both beef and sheep producers as well as swine producers, but only required for those youth swine producers. So the curriculum is developed by the Pork Board and collaborating with University of Wisconsin. The county educators in each county are the educators and trainers and testers for the curriculum. So before each county fair, youth will get together in each county. Educators will provide the training and do a testing for the participants before they are allowed to go on and show and sell their animals. So I'm out of order here, but so talking about this year, there's different highlights of the program, key lessons, and they go through one topic per year on a rotating basis. So the focus of this year was animal health products. So we talked about, just as a background, where youth fit in the supply chain, both as consumers and producers. We talked about quality assurance. So what is quality assurance? Did some lessons on that with the kids to make them aware of their role in producing safe and healthy food. We talked about the importance of observing animals at your farm and at the fair, and just making sure that you're assessing their health on a regular basis, and if any issues come up, that you address those before they affect not only that animal but others around it. And we talked also about the importance of the vet client patient relationship. So youth producers, a lot of them might not have a great relationship with their veterinarian, or maybe it's more of their parents' responsibility, but we try to affirm the importance of having that good relationship and being able to call on a vet when you have an issue at your farm or at the fair. Talked about over-the-counter versus prescription drugs, how to reinterpret drug labels if any of the youth are doing administering of drugs themselves. Talked about safe handling of drugs and needles and proper drug administration. So there are different ways to, and locations in an animal to apply or administer drugs. And you need to know that because it can affect meat quality if it's given in the wrong, if you're giving an injection in the wrong place, that can come back and have a pretty big impact on the meat itself that goes into the market. Talked about residues and withdrawal time. So withdrawal time is the period between when a drug is administered and when that animal has it go through their system. So obviously we don't want to be sending animals to the market that have drug residues in them. Although it does happen, an important part of this training is just to tell kids that they need to keep track of those records when drugs are administered, and know that they're not sending the market that might have a violation in terms of drug residues. So talk about antibiotics and their proper use and concerns. Just as we have concerns in humans with antibiotic use, there are concerns in animal management. So just emphasizing the fact that you have to have proper records, you need to use antibiotics only when they're needed, kind of trying to cut back on their use for growth promotants and all that. And then a big one is biosecurity. So that's really important, especially with outbreaks of diseases that can happen pretty quickly among animal herds. So talking about ways to clean your facilities, monitor your animals. If you see an issue, isolate particular animals within a herd so they're not spreading the disease throughout your entire herd. So those are kind of the big things that we went over this year. Any questions? That was way shorter and way less exciting than I intended to make.
It was going to be exciting.
I hope the kids think it's exciting. So.
You know what the word exciting means?
Right. And it's required. So it's a program that I don't think a lot of kids are looking forward to doing, but some of them did get really engaged, more engaged than I thought they would be. So And that's important because we're eating the meat that they're producing. So.
What kids are you presenting this to?
So this is to 4-H, mostly 4-H kids or FFA kids, that anybody that's going to show and sell their animals. Kind of breezed over that.
Great. We'll start with the educator reports.
Okay, thanks. That's great. My name is Terry Ward. I'm the administrator for the Nutrition Education Program. And just to give you a brief update on where we are, we're wrapping up our summer programming and beginning our more intensive in-school and fall programming. We're currently using an evidence-based curriculum from Cornell University. It's called Choose Health, Fun, Food, and Fitness. And if anyone has any questions about their curriculum or would like to see a copy at any time, feel free to give us a call. We're pretty excited about the evidence base because it has shown results. So moving forward, we're going to focus a little bit more on connecting with parents. We realize that when we reach the children, they don't always have any choices in the food that they're getting or in their food supply or the choices that parents are providing. So in order to provide multi-level programming, we're doing outreach to parents, all the students that we currently teach, and looking for new partners through our curriculum that's called Eating Smart, Being Active. And that's a great curriculum. It's very detailed. It's a series of 8 weeks. And people really enjoy that, particularly the graduation. They get a certificate, and they get incentives to reinforce their behavior throughout the program, like measuring cups so they can understand and know portion control, et cetera, those type of concepts. So. That pretty much wraps up what we're up to right now. Does anybody have any questions about nutrition education?
The program, you'd mentioned more fact-based or
evidence-based.
Contrast this, could you contrast it against, like, for instance, the edict handed down by the federal government from current administration, because my kids are like, they're trying to starve us. So how does that differ, you know, from Michelle Obama's, you know, food program to this one,
sure,
where it's evidence-based, or is it different?
It's somewhat different. So I think Michelle Obama's program focuses on the Choose My Plate bottle and about making healthy choices, and much of that information is actually in our various curricula. So the main difference is we have pilot tested, or extensions or programs around the country have pilot tested series and have done rigorous experiments to make sure that there are outcomes that are better than, like, not having a class or not having all the components of the class. So they've done comparison tests, and it feels pretty good to be able to say that when you go into a place versus just saying, hey, we have a cooking class. We're going to work with the kids and cook some, you know. That's fine. That's fun for the kids. But the message that we want to reinforce on multiple levels is that we need to be looking at the overall picture of what type of nutrients are you getting. You know, that's important.
Because everybody's metabolism is different.
Sure.
And if you're in sports versus not sports, you burn a heck of a lot more calories.
Absolutely.
So having some cookie cutter does not work.
Absolutely. And our curriculum addresses that too. Like,
okay,
we talk about different varying levels of calorie needs, not only for age, but activity level and people with special needs. So that's a great point, and we do address that. And we make sure that people understand there's not just one cookie cutter, like you said, answer for everybody. It varies. So, and people are happy to see that. They like to see, oh, wow, okay, might not be great this week, but next week I can get back on track.
Right.
So I think that's actually a really helpful component,
right,
to the program.
Thank you.
Well, my name is Carmelo Davila. I'm the youth development educator. Just wanted to mention, this last month we had the 4-H open house, and I was here working with Bethany Rush and a group of Bethany Sorcy and a group of highly involved volunteers, and it was a blast. We broke records of attendance. We have 165 youth attending. This is 43 more than last year. We never have, at least in many years, we didn't have that many youth attending. And again, these are youth that are not in 4-H. This is youth that heard from friends or from, you know, parents about 4-H, and they came here. They met with, you know, every club has a promotional booth. We also have people, you know, working in the 4-H projects, and they went all around and, you know, got to hear about what 4-H has to offer from, you know, the club leaders. And it's a great opportunity for our members to show what they're learning, you know, the fun that they have and everything. So it's also an opportunity to give them, you know, to engage them in selling 4-H, you know, basically telling people, you know, this is a great program. So it went super well. Also, you might remember we did a fun activity last month about, you know, the Tech Wizard program, the robotics program that we have that is funded by the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. Until last summer, we only had two mentors, and obviously that put some limitations in terms of the amount of youth that we could, you know, integrate in the program. Now, after months of an aggressive marketing strategy, including, you know, putting newspaper recruiting ads and also doing on-site visits to local industries and companies, we finally recruited six new mentors, and they are already trained, and they have been located in our two school sites, which are Lincoln and Washington, and they're very excited, very highly qualified individuals. One of them is even a retired university professor, and the others work in, you know, local industry, you know, technology industry and everything. So I think it's a great opportunity for these individuals to encourage youth to see the potential of a career in science, engineering, math, or technology. So it's doing well.
So I'm going to just quickly, I'm Barb Larson, I'm the horticulture educator. Really. And last night we had our fourth level one Master Gardener training. We have 33 new trainees into the Master Gardener volunteer program. The difference this year that's new is we're piloting where about half of the classes are the traditional 3-hour lecture discussion hands-on, but about half of them are what are using a flipped education method. And that means that the participants watch YouTube videos that are done by both county educators, so one of them's the woody plants, trees and shrubs is by me, but also university specialists on specific topics. And then the classroom time is hands-on activities where we discuss it and they can put what they learned into practice. So, a little bit, slightly different way of doing it, and then we will be evaluating and seeing how people like this, and I have a feeling they're going to like that combination. And especially since this is an evening class, it's really nice when we finish 7:30 or 8 o'clock, especially for people that work all day, versus after 9 o'clock for the other two, so kind of a win-win.
Okay, Amy Grile, I'm the Community and Natural Resource and Economic Development Educator here. I wanted to speak about a study that's currently being published. Over the last year, the UW Extension has been partnering with the Wisconsin Main Street Program to deliver a study about storefront improvements and economic impacts. We finally have our 24 case studies completed and basically look at the rate of, or the return on investment, and what returns can be expected. Of the 24 case studies, they encompass restaurants, retail establishments, and also professional services. And we've deduced 10 general conclusions that will be very useful to property owners as they evaluate their projects and see what sorts of returns could be expected, such as increase in first-time customers, increase in sales, increase in rental revenue. Also included in this is a worksheet to evaluate your project in 5 steps, kind of allowing you to plug in numbers and generate some rudimentary figures on how many years until you can see a payback on your investment. So anyone that's interested or has any contacts that might be interested in this study, just drop me an email and I will forward it to you.
Lastly, I'll report. I sent all of you the email with the position description for the ag educator, so help us cast that net wide and far. The closing date for that position is October 21st, so we encourage candidates to apply online. Everything is done through an online process through the university. Preliminary interviews will be held in November, and we just narrowed down the final interview dates to be either December 3rd or 4th. And again, Chairman Noble will be representing the committee on that, because we'll have Racine County representatives as well on the committee. So the goal is to have a new educator on board in January. I also want to report that Leadership Kenosha kicked off its 2014-15 program year with 16 participants. Carmelo is one of them this year. We held our annual retreat at Colerger Conference Center and then did the challenge course out here at Wonderland Camp and Conference Center in Camp Lake. We have participants this year from the industry such as healthcare, education, nonprofits, county government. We have Uline, Ocean Spray, and SC Johnson represented this year. And then lastly, I'm just going to share that Amy and I co-facilitated, along with a colleague from ARDC, on training Real Colors for their colleagues in the Department of Division of Aging and Resources, ADRC. I have to use the acronym, excuse me, that's the only way it rolls off my tongue. It's ADRC. So we did that for two afternoons, probably about 75 colleagues there from that department. So it was very, very interesting, good process. So.
Questions from anybody? So, I guess we will recess then for 5 minutes and we'll start again.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.